it doesn't have to be music, but if you can take something with your pain and translate it into something positive, I think it'll help you feel a lot better about it. And there's a lot of resources out there for people to get help. And, you know, I think you just got to kind of stick through the bad times to get to the good ones.
Thank you for tuning into this week's episode of Trevor Talks. I'm your host, Trevor Tyson. I'm so excited that each and every single one of you have taken time out of your day to just join us for this conversation. I think it's going to be fun. It's probably one of my favorites that I've had in quite a while, and we haven't even had it yet. So here we go. I just want to give a special shout out before we get started to our friends at Life Audio for making this week's episode possible. So special thank you to them. And this week's guest is a powerhouse vocalist, lyricist, and the frontman of one of my favorite metalcore bands, Dayseeker. They have a new record on the horizon, which is called Dark Sun. And let me just tell you all, it's a masterpiece. So if you've been looking for some metalcore gold, you go listen to Dark Sun. And by the time this comes out, it may not be out yet, but you know what? It's coming, and you better be ready for it. So please help me welcome Mr. Rory Rodriguez. Rory, thank you for being here, man.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks again for having me, dude. I appreciate it.
Dude, of course. It's like I was telling you before, I've actively been listening to this thing nonstop. I had a four-hour flight from LA back to Atlanta the other day, and I listened to it the whole way, and I'm like, this is something you can get lost in and actually feel like you're enjoying a full album as a whole. It's not like you had 20 singles come out off of it and then you dropped a record. Like, this is something that fans are going to get lost in. And even people that haven't heard of Dayseeker before, it really just defines a whole new genre, it feels like. So I don't know if that was intentional or not, but that's amazing.
Yeah, thanks, man. It's, I think we didn't like change the formula like too hardcore from like sure. Sleep Talk, but it was definitely like, I feel like, I look back on Sleep Talk and I feel like we were still kind of trying to live in like our like metal kind of metalcore roots. And then I feel like this one, like while we were working on it, I was like, some of these parts remind me of like Jimmy Eat World or like Taking Back Sunday, like more just like a rock band. And then obviously like we kind of lean into like the sort of like synth wave kind of 80s sound for a lot of like the synthesizers on the record. So I'm like super happy with it, but it is always very, very scary putting something new out into the world and just hoping like people enjoy it, you know?
Well, especially when the synthesizers are synced in with breakdowns and you're just like pulling the whole 80s vibe in there with the synthesizers, and it's just a perfect formula that you found. And after hearing Sleep Talk and falling in love with it, like during the pandemic, it's like, can they top it? Can they not? And I'm happy to say, like, I don't think you can actively say that you can top something like that because it was a masterpiece, but they're both in the same lane. Like, they're both masterpieces. So shout out to y'all for just going out on a whim and trying something new. Like, it's honestly refreshing. Like, you hear a lot of the same sounds come from bands and this isn't it. So Dark Sun is something all on its own.
Dude, thanks. Yeah, it's always that's funny you said that, because it was like cool seeing like the reception that Sleep Talk got after it came out, but then it didn't really start to settle in until we started working on like Neon Grave was like the first song we started writing for the album. And then it was just like immediately second guessing like everything we were doing. Cause I was like, man, people like really, really liked, that album Sleep Talk. And so it's just like, damn, like, I just hope, you know, and I'm sure there are going to be some people who are like, yeah, like the new album's good, but like, it's not Sleep Talk. And I mean, but I think if you just like kind of listen to it with like a fresh set of ears and you're not trying to look for like Sleep Talk Part 2, because that's always kind of weird to me too. And I'm like, you just want the exact same album again, like right at, I don't know. Like, I'm like, I would hope you would have gotten older and maybe want to hear something like a little different like we do, you know?
Yeah. And maybe go back and listen to Sleep Talk. Like, it's there for you and it has not changed. That is there for you. And this record, I want to dive into it just right off the bat. So can we start off talking about Dark Sun and kind of the creative behind the name and the whole concept of the album?
Yeah. I mean, it was a lot of just like kind of compiling like instrumentals and just kind of like vibes sort of like first. And then we, kind of dig a little bit more into like the lyrical stuff. But yeah, I mean, I ended up writing like half of the album about my father after he passed away. And then, so there was like 5 songs on there about it. And I mean, there's like Dream State, Neon Grave, like they kind of all touch on like different things, but Dark Sun was just a very kind of like a metaphor basically for just feeling like the sun burned out like the day that my dad died. So that's kind of like a lot of this like sort of apocalyptic imagery in that particular track. But it felt like because so much of the album was about my dad that the title track should be like one of the songs about him. So it just had a cool feel to it. I kind of just like, even before we got like the album artwork done, I just had a kind of like visual in my head, like not too far off from what we ended up getting back. And I was just like, oh, I think it'll be like just a cool, like a different vibe than like the really blue and white, like kind of a like girl in the bathtub from Sleep Talk, and just like a little darker and, but still kind of trying to keep those like sort of like neon colors and, you know, to try and line up with like the sound of the album. But yeah, very, very proud of it. But it, we worked on it for like a year off and on. So it took a while to get done.
Well, I'm proud of it and I didn't even make it. So it's,
thanks, man.
It's going to be something for everyone. And if they don't like it, they obviously didn't listen to it correctly. And going through the loss of your father being something so drastic in your life, you obviously had emotions stemming from that. But in return, you had your daughter around the same time and they were actually able to meet before he passed. So I would imagine with those two huge, like catastrophic life events, that there were some mixed emotions. Like you're sad about your father's passing, but you're excited for the life of your daughter. Like your whole world's going to revolve around her for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. How were you able to like differentiate the emotions and really turn that into something creative to work through it?
I mean, yeah, it was, I mean, it was tough. It was, cause it was even like the experience of like, cause I was with my dad, like the last couple of days he was alive. He was just kind of in hospice and he wasn't actually like conscious, but I think he could like hear us and stuff. But it was obviously like just a very, very dark kind of experience. But it was also just like, you know, it's just like a lot of like off and on, like crying here and there. But then like my daughter, she was only like 6 months at the time, and just a very kind of sweet and chill baby, and so she would just kind of be like smiling or like laughing, and so she was a nice kind of like buffer between like a really horrible like experience. Yeah. And I think I'm very thankful that like I had like my daughter after my dad passed, because it was like, it's, I mean, like, it's still horrible, like losing your parent, but I feel like having her there as like, just like this ultimate distraction of like so much love and like joy. It was like a nice thing to like, I don't want to say like, take my mind off of like that experience, but it just, I think it helped me like make sure I wasn't just like wallowing in just like this like really tough point in my life. And I think like, I don't know, I feel like it's just when I get locked into a song, I just really try and like throw myself back into it. So like Dark Sun, I obviously just like really tried to pay attention to how I was feeling at the time. But then, you know, on the flip side, there's like Afterglow, I wrote about my daughter, and it was nice too, because we like kind of worked on that one. Like it was like the last song we worked on for the album, but it was better because Afterglow was actually the second song, like instrumentally, that I brought to our producer after Neon Grave. And we sat on it for like a long time, and I was like trying to write for it, but it ended up coming out better, I think, like the longer she was alive. Cause then there was all these like aspects of like, I had gone away on a couple tours. So I was like experiencing like those emotions and like kind of feeling like I was missing out on like these like small milestones in her life, because I'm gone on the road. And then so, you know, just kind of trying to dive deep into that. And then even like there's a track called Homesick, so I feel like Homesick is like a good kind of description of what you're talking about, because I kind of wrote it specifically about like knowing that I'm in a really dark period of my life with my dad passing away, but there were still like people, places and things, like my daughter, like her mom, like, or just experiences, like, touring and just feeling like music was paying off, where it was, like making me feel like it was okay to be happy again through a really dark time in my life. So that was, like, our, like, soft attempt at trying to write something, like, more uplifting. And it's still, like, kind of sad sometimes, but it's, yeah, it was trying to, like, I guess, get the best of both worlds with, like, really sad stuff and really happy stuff. But it's tricky for sure. It's also, like, 1,000 times easier to write a sad song as opposed to a happy song. Yeah.
Well, the big thing about Afterglow is, like you said, like, you worked on making it a more positive ending, which, thinking about it now, like, the album concept being Dark Sun and then the song being called Afterglow, ending it with that track, which the subtitle, I guess what you call it, Hazel's song, like, that's for her. Like, this is exactly what season you're in now. And the vulnerability behind that track really stuck with me of, like, I'm not a father, but my best friend and his wife just had their baby last week, and being able to, like, I met her yesterday and was able to hold her for the first time, and seeing something like a person so tiny, like, so helpless, so innocent. She's pretty chill too, like, no crying. It was great. But being able to see and hold someone that small, it's like you can't help but be joyous in that moment. And knowing that someone's life is going to be revolved around a child for the rest of their life, like, whatever you do on tour, whatever you do for work, like, everything is, like, providing for that child. So with you opening up about that and, like, being on tour, being away while those, like, small milestones are happening and her getting a little bit bigger every time you come home, yeah, it's bittersweet, but, like, this is also what I would assume was your dream all along, like, being able to do this and finally have a family. It's a double-edged sword. Like, you're never going to have, like, the perfect life, but you're embracing it, and it sounds like you're healing from it.
Yeah, I'm trying. You know, it's, I think now it's, like, if I had my daughter a few years ago, like pre-sleep talk, I actually don't know if I would have, like, kept doing music as, like, seriously as we have been, just because, like, it wasn't really, like, it was only, like, up until, like, maybe, like, a year ago that I, like, I came home from a tour and I was, like, I don't think I need to work a job anymore. Like, I had, like, thankfully, like, made enough money to, like, pay my bills and then some, and then I knew I was going to make more on, like, our headline. So I was just kind of like, oh, like, I had like my transitional moment where I was like, I can now make a living, like, just touring. But, like, that was not the case before Sleep Talk. So it's interesting to think about, because now it's like, it is sad, but I also, like, I just kind of have to constantly remind myself that I'm going on tour, like, to make money for her and to, like, put food on the table. And it is, you know, and you're right. I mean, it is, like, also just something that I was, like, working really hard for a really long time. And I'm lucky that her mom is, like very cool about the whole touring thing. Cause we had a talk, like, the day she was born, and I was just like, I'm not quite ready to, like, stop writing and, like, touring and stuff. And she was like, yeah, like, I totally understand that. So she's kind of a champion when I'm gone. Cause she basically is just kind of, like, with my daughter, like, a huge majority of the time. But it's also, like, you know, I put money away for her, for our daughter. So it's like, I hope it's, like, appreciated, but it is, it's tough, man. And there are times too on tour where, like, I feel guilty, cause, like, I'm not there to help as much when I'm gone. But, it does, it's just, things are going so well for the band right now. It feels like it would be, like, a shame to, like, stop, like, right now, you know?
Oh, yeah. Of course. And y'all have accumulated such a fan base as well. Like we were talking before we started recording, at Blue Ridge, the computers got hot or something and you weren't able to do your full production. You just came out with an acoustic guitar, and that's terrorizing for most, but you were able to work through it. And it was actually, like, not saying the set wasn't going to be amazing, but that was a memorable moment. Like, a lot of people in that crowd are never going to forget that. They had that intimate moment with just you. And of course, like, band lineups change and et cetera, and people get to know someone and then they're gone. It's like, Rory's the one really piecing everything together for, like, the lyrics and all this good stuff. So, like, they got to have that moment with you. I felt like I had a moment with you. I was like, after you got off, I was like, dude, like, whatever that was, just keep doing it. Like, it was crazy. And yeah. It's incredible to think about, like, the rise of Dayseeker as a whole over the past few years. But how long has Dayseeker been a thing?
Probably close to like 10 years now, which is wild. But I mean, it really only started picking up a few years ago when Sleep Talk came out, because we were kind of trying to still, I think, like, we had like a small, like, really, really minor rise in popularity when we first like got signed to Invogue Records, and we were kind of like really based in like metalcore and post-hardcore, like very like half screaming, half singing, like a lot of the time. And so I think like we just kind of kept writing it, and I feel like it was still pretty like authentic on like the first two. And then I feel like by our third album, it's called Dreaming Is Sinking, Waking Is Rising, I feel like there are some good songs in there, but I also just felt like even while we were making the album, like there were just times where I felt kind of like uninspired, or I felt like I was reaching like creatively, because I just didn't feel like our hearts were like, well, like, because we didn't, like, none of us listened to like a lot of metal or hardcore, and then we were just kind of like, I don't really get like why we're writing this music still. And then I think we were just scared to like branch out into something different. I think there's so many bands who like they try and go softer, and I feel like their fan base just kind of eats them alive. And we were, but then it was funny because I feel like it was the opposite for us. Like we did it, and then like a lot of our fans were like, "Oh, like finally." We were like, "Oh, okay." Like I thought people were gonna hate this when we tried to go softer, but it's. I'm happy. Yeah, like that things are. It took a while, but I'm happy. It seems to finally be going well.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolfe. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Well, it's obviously pop-infused, and this album is a good bit softer, but it's counterbalanced with the heavy stuff as well. Like, it worked, and it's phenomenal. Like, and I was talking about it the other day. You guys being packaged with Bad Omens on this next tour is a perfect package. Like, you're both kind of walking that genre line, which you guys are like six different genres, like, personally, I would say. But, like, going back to the album that you just spoke about, Dreaming Is Sinking, Waking Is Rising, every time I get in the car, Abandoned turns on, I just turn it up, because like it'll go on shuffle or whatever, and I'm like, heck yeah, like this is good stuff. So the fact that people are starting to learn about you now, still in 2022, you've got about 10 years behind your belt. What did it look like coming up? Like, obviously you did Warped Tour, you've toured the country in vans. Like, it's not the most glamorous lifestyle in the world. And a lot of people don't realize, like you said, like up until maybe a year ago, you still worked a job. I know people that are in really successful bands right now in the public eye, and they still go home and work normal jobs. What did that look like for you?
It was just so much grinding. I mean, like the first tour we did in the US, I think it was about 10 years ago. It was with like Kingdom of Giants. And then this local band from San Diego called Adestria. And it was just like, I mean, well, I had only been to like a couple states outside of California at that point. So like the first tour was like, and we were seriously playing to like 30 or 40 on like a bad night, and like maybe a little over 100 on like good nights. And we were still just like, so like ecstatic. Cause it was like, we're on a tour, like it's a real thing now. And it's just, but it is funny. Cause it's like, I think like the longer you tour, it's like the hungrier you get for like better touring opportunities, like actual venues. Like, you're not playing like a hookah club, you know, in like Denver or something. And it's just, it really. So Warped Tour, I think, was like a really big turning point. But then we did another tour after Warped Tour, with this band Palisades, and it's just, I don't know why, but that's, the tour just like did not do very well. A big majority of the time, it wasn't like horrible most of the time, but I could tell we were kind of, and I think that was right around when Dreaming is Sinking, like a little bit after that had come out. And I think we were very much like, yeah, like, I don't think I can keep doing this much longer. Like, I think we really wrote Sleep Talk as kind of like a, like, if this goes like how all the other ones have gone in popularity, I don't know if we're going to be a band much longer. Cause it was just like, yeah, driving like 10 hours to play to like 80 people and do a couple hundred bucks in merch a night, and you're just like so sleep deprived and just like living in a van. It's just, yeah, it's like the juice is not worth the squeeze, you know? But, yeah, I think when Sleep Talk came out and we did a tour with Wage War, that was when we kind of were like, and it was funny because I think it came out the day that that tour started, and even just the lead up hype of like the singles we had dropped before the album came out, like the live experience was a lot different. And then obviously the pandemic happened, which it seemed like a bummer because I felt like we were just kind of hitting our stride, and we were, but I feel like it, like that album, I feel like became a lot of people's like quarantine album because there was like nothing to do. It was a hard time. And, I think it was like, it had such a chance to like, kind of like marinate that by the time we came back to, we picked up on a tour with like, We Came as Romans and The Devil Wears Prada. Yeah. And that was especially kind of like an oh shit moment. There was just a lot of like, oh my God, like there's a ton of people who sing along now. Like the energy is just very different. And then, yeah, I mean, we did our first proper headliner, earlier this year, and it was just like crazy. It was just like, it definitely feels like over the last couple of years, like I don't know, like, it just feels like we're a real band now. Like not like I mean, we've been a band for a long time, but it definitely was just kind of like a, you know, just all the touring opportunities that we have even for like next year that we haven't announced yet. It's just like really, really cool stuff. And it's like stuff we wanted for a really long time, but you're right, man. It's an absolute grind. Even now, like with the shows being good, there are times where I'm like, this is hard. This is really, really hard sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Well, you were persistent and you stayed the course, and now you get to enjoy the benefits of it all. And it's funny you bring up the Wage War tour, cause it popped a random memory in my head. We were doing Radio City Music Hall the night that y'all were in New York City. And after I got done, I got an Uber and like went to the Gramercy Theater, and they were like, oh, it's sold out. So I spent $30 on an Uber, didn't even get to see the show, but I made an attempt to be there that night. And just a random memory. It's so fun. Sorry, I think I'll DM.
The show sold out.
Sorry, we sold out. Like, no. Yeah. I got to see the venue outside, and people were packing up trucks and stuff, or like, I guess y'all played first and packing up the van and stuff. So it was fun.
Yeah.
But in your music, like historically and in this record, you open up about your mental health quite a bit, which is something I like to open up about and talk about as vulnerably as possible, because so many people are out there struggling. And we did this event the past 2 years called Choose to Live. And it's like, so many people out there are struggling, and we try to bring as many people together as possible. Like, a lot of my audience is in the faith-based circuit. So of course we have like the Christians, but then we have like atheists, like agnostic, like everybody come together for one event. Like, we're not talking about anything other than mental health. I'm going to pull out a Nerf gun and shoot you if you go into something else. Like, it needs to happen. And the vulnerability that you're opening up to in your music is helping a lot of people, whether you see it firsthand or not. Like, I can imagine when you're at shows, people come up to you and are like, man, you saved my life. Like, your music helped me through a really dark time. Is mental health something that you've like struggled with in the past? And if it has, how have you been able to overcome it?
You know, it's funny. Probably wouldn't imagine it, like off of our music, but I feel like for a really long time, I've been like pretty okay with my mental health. And I think I have like songwriting to thank for that. Cause I feel like since I was like 15 or 16, it's been like a very like cathartic, just like kind of release. Like I've gone through like breakups where I've just been like so sad and heartbroken. And then I would like write songs about it. And every time I would like, feel like I translated like really negative feelings into something that was like some form of like art or something that was productive. It like made it feel less like in vain to me. Like I was like, well, yeah, I got dumped, but at least like I wrote this song about it. And I wouldn't say it's like self-torture, but it's interesting. I had this side project called Hurt Wave, and I just started talking to this girl who historically has not been very kind to my emotions, or like, I mean, I've been writing songs about her since our first album, and there's one about her on like, even on the new record, there's still like songs about her. And it's like, but I like walked into the situation going like, at least if like this goes badly, like I'll have stuff to write about. And like, sure enough, I ended up writing like, I wrote this song called Overdose about her on our Hurt Wave EP. I wrote this song called My Father Said. And then I wrote Without Me about her on the new album. Random stuff. So it is, I'm lucky that I have songwriting, and it's funny that I've kind of started talking about it more and more, but it's like, I find in my personal life, it's really easy for me to be like very open and talk about like anything with anybody. Like sometimes people are like, oh, I don't know if that's like hard for you to talk about. And I'm like, I talk about like my dad passing away like every night on stage in front of like hundreds of people. Like it doesn't really like faze me anymore. And it's, I feel like I actively do it because I notice like specifically like a lot of my guy friends are not down to be super open about their emotions, their feelings. And I feel like it's that stigma of like, if you're a guy, it's like, just shut up and be tough and swallow it. But then I know from personal experience too, it's like, if you stifle like emotions you're feeling or things you're going through, you're just going to explode one day, or you're just bottling it up. It's just like not healthy for you. So I always encourage like my friends and pretty much anybody to just vent and talk about how they're feeling. Cause I feel like it's different when thoughts exist in your head as opposed to like vocalizing them out loud. But I'm lucky that I've had it, but it's actually funny. Cause like, I feel like, well, it's not funny at all, but I feel like recently, like I've had a lot of, like more anxiety than like I can remember having like ever in my life. And it's, I don't know if that's like, I'm not saying like it's my daughter's fault, but there is just like so much responsibility in like taking care of like this tiny human, and so much overthinking of like, is she like doing well for her age? You know, like, am I doing everything right I can as a parent on top of like my father being gone? And then like it's just like the touring schedule picking up, which is like cool. But then it's just like, it's like, I don't usually like think like this, but I looked at the Bad Omen schedule, or I like sent it to one of my friends, and she was like, she's like, I'm already tired for you. And then I was like, yeah, it is a lot of shows. I was just like, it's just, you know, so it's interesting. And I've had like a lot of, like stomach problems that I've been looking into, but I know like my buddy, he's one of our managers too. His name's Garrett, from Silent Planet. He was like, he also has a lot of stomach issues. And he was telling me that like, he, ended up going to like a psychologist and basically got prescribed like a really low dosage anti-anxiety, and that it basically cured all of his, cause I guess basically like when you get stressed or anxious, you can like turn a lot of like stomach acid. And I guess it was like damaging, like the inner lining of his stomach. And so I guess he got this like small anti-anxiety thing, and then it made it go away. So now he's fine. And so I went to the doctor like 3 weeks ago, and they gave me like anti-anxiety meds on like the lowest dosage I can get. And I've always kind of been like anti-medication, but sure. I also just feel like, I'm like, if it's low dosage and it can help me and I'm not like relying on it too hardcore, like it's fine. But it is like, yeah, I mean, anxiety is a very real thing, especially like, I think too, it's like the social interaction at shows. Like there's just kind of this pressure when you interact with people that you have to just be like very charming, very kind, very nice. And I don't think like that's, it's hard to be nice to people, but I just think like, I feel like I've tried to be generally pretty nice to our fan base anytime I've interacted with them. And it's just funny. Like you'll just read a comment where like somebody be like, I met him a few years ago and he was a and you're just like, I'm like, I really don't think that happened. Or like, if I did, it's just weird how people can just like, because there's definitely times where I've gone to talk to the crowd and it might've been like an hour or 2 hours straight of people just coming up. And I'm just kind of like enduring a lot of just trauma dumping of people just going like, my dad died, my mom died, the cancer, the drug addiction. It's just all this stuff. And it's like, I feel a lot for people. So I feel like it weighs on me a lot. And then I feel like if I maybe, I mean, there's other nights where I'd go out there and I would still do all the same things, but there's just some nights where I'd be a lot more like, let's go, I'll talk to anybody. And then some nights where I was like, I really don't want to go out there. I'm really tired. I don't feel like happy in this moment, but you just kind of have to go. And it's like, maybe if somebody caught you in a night where like, you weren't being like overly enthusiastic about meeting them, they might just be like, that guy's a dick. And it's like people like, I'm on like 3 hours of sleep and, you know, and I'm tired. And too, like a lot of times on tour, it's like, it's a lot more about like my, a lot of our conversations is just like a lot of like thank yous and like, I appreciate you because I have to save my voice because I can't like, I used to like get into like really lengthy conversations with fans and then I'd go up stage to perform and be like, my voice actually feels like more tired because I spent a lot of time talking to you. So it's, I mean, I'm thankful, but like, I haven't really like ever felt like feelings of like suicide or anything. I think my thing is a lot more like anxiety based, but I'm trying to fix it. And it's definitely, I think, worse lately than it has been like in my life ever. But like, I'm just like, I'm thankful it's a minor case, you know, cause I know there's like a lot of people I'm close to who are like, it causes them to feel suicidal or just like the worst thing is going to happen at all times. And I feel pretty optimistic for the most part, but I mean, life's hard, you know, it's hard to be happy like 24/7.
It is. And I mean, I've been around bands that don't do meet and greets anymore simply because like they have a huge hit song that is about something sad in every single meet and greet, like every single person in the line, hundreds of people a night would come up and share the exact same thing. Like, I lost this person. It's like, that's not good for like the individual's mental health. That's getting all that unloaded on them. And not saying like people shouldn't feel open to talk about it, but like you also have to realize like, yeah, they're being vulnerable and you feel connected to that person in that way, but like they're a human too and they just heard it 200 times. Like maybe like I don't want to tell people not to because that might be something for, that they really need, but it's like it's hard. Like you do feel like you have to turn it on and turn it off. And you can't be optimistic and super on this adrenaline high 100% of the time. You're just gonna crash. So yeah, like I wouldn't sweat it. Like people are you're not gonna be able to make everybody happy ever, so like you might give them a hurt wave every now and again.
No, I'm happy you said that, man, because it is like I'm happy that you understand that, because I feel like that's been like a weird thing I've tried to like think about how to talk about that, because it is something where like, yeah, I don't want to like come off ungrateful or like insensitive, because that's not it. And I usually read like most message requests I get, and that's like a little bit more manageable, but you're right.
Well, when you think about it, like you're not being negative or ungrateful. It's like you're protecting the rest of the shows and the rest of the fans that want to see you perform. And if you're out there having these individual exchanges, like I've heard it said best, like, do you want to encounter like and have that moment with as many people as possible and impact them in that way, or just one person? Because you can't do both all the time. So like, nah, don't feel bad about that. Like, and people that are listening aren't going to feel like you're coming across as ungrateful. Like, it's a lot. You're a very emotional writer. You're encountering a lot of people. A lot of people are hearing and seeing these music videos and the imagery that you've built out of vulnerability. So you're running the good race. I think you're doing an amazing job. And really, to just close this out, if someone's out there struggling right now, maybe they just lost their dad or they're going through something just to where they're not going to hear it on meet and greets and stuff, what would you say to someone struggling in this moment right now?
Just that, I mean, from my own personal experience with like my mom was a drug addict when I was younger, and it just felt like most of my teenage years up into high school just kind of felt like a constant sort of uphill battle, and just like this relentless, just like this is a lot for how young I am. And I like, is this just this constant inner question of like, does this ever let up, and do it, can I catch a break at some point? And I'm like, you know, I'm happy that like, again, like I never had feelings of like suicide, but I had a lot of feelings of just like, I like life is not fun, like a lot of the time. And I kind of just stuck it out, and now I'm happy that I'm like, I mean, it took a long time, but like, I have a career in music. Like I have a daughter, like I, like my, like in my 30s, like I'm 33, and I feel like the last couple of years of my life have been like the, like my favorite part of life so far. And even like my 20s for the most part were like a blast. And so I guess just to remind people, like, you know, just to give it time, things can get a lot better. I mean, for my own personal thing, it's just like, yeah, not to hold anything in. If you can it doesn't have to be music, but if you can take something with your pain and translate it into something positive, I think it'll help you feel a lot better about it. And there are so many resources, I feel like, these days for people to get help, like mentally. I mean, like your friends are great, obviously, but like, I'm like a big supporter of like Heart Support. I think they even have like, I'm pretty sure they have even like an anonymous message board, so that if you want to, you can just like open up about like very real experiences you're going through. But you like, if you didn't feel comfortable in saying like, this is me and my name, like you can still get like help or advice like from people, but they're a great support system. And yeah, I would just say just to exercise, just try probably not too many drugs or alcohol, and just try and take care of your body. But I mean, there's a lot of resources out there for people to get help. And, you know, I think you just got to kind of stick through the bad times to get to the good ones.
Yeah. And I love that you bring Heart Support up. If you're watching this on YouTube right now, you can comment in the comment section below, and it goes automatically to the Heart Support wall, and people will be able to interact with you and offer you some support in this time. Go to heartsupport.com if you're struggling today, deathtolife.com, Beneath the Skin. There's so many amazing resources, just like Rory was just talking about, for you out there, and we want you to choose to live today and every single day. So don't give up hope. Go check out Dark Sun. They've got some amazing pre-order bundles out right now, and I assume a lot of really cool things on the horizon after hearing everything you've discussed in this, Rory. So thank you for being here. Thank you to everybody for listening. If you're new here, or if you're old here, like, I know this is a little bit different of a conversation, but you know what? This album's a banger. Rory's got a great heart, and I'm so glad you guys joined us for this today. We'll talk to you next week. Bye now.
Hey, Ted, what do you want to do today?
Well, Ashley, I've always got work to do, naps to take, but I have a better idea. How about we invite everyone to listen to the TMUS podcast?
I love that idea. Let's do it right now. Hi, everyone. We're Ted and Ashley Slater, and we'd love for you to join us as we talk about teamwork in marriage.
We share how grace, commitment, and cooperation can help couples live the everyday moments of marriage together.
To listen, go to lifeaudio.com and search for Team Us.